Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Millwall captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. It was, that's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again. And Millwall are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection!
Hello and welcome to the MSC Podcast, the first podcast of 2017, and we've got a lot to catch up on. I'm joined by Jay Buster, as usual, and also Joe McKelvey. Welcome along, Joe.
Thanks very much, brother.
Jay Buster, Happy New Year, guys. It's been a wee while since we've last recorded, and we've got four games to look back on, as well as looking ahead to what promises to be an interesting 2017 at the club. Jay, well, briefly go back to the first game of the Christmas period and the 1-1 draw at McDermott Park against St Johnstone. Given you were the only one there in the day, you're possibly most qualified to discuss the game. A 1-1 draw at a ground that we've not favoured too well at recently, so I suppose it was a good start, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like absolutely ages ago, so I think I've forgotten most of it, But yeah, it was probably a very good point, not just in terms of how difficult it is to go to McDermott Park, but also in terms of the game itself. I thought that, you know, Motherwell were pretty poor throughout the 90. I think McGee perhaps got, you know, the tactics themselves wrong. Scott McDonald was played out in the left of midfield for most of the game, and it just didn't work in the slightest. Both goals were pretty ridiculous. You know, Richard Tate puts in a ball and I'm not really sure what the Saints keeper was doing, and it seemed as though St Johnstone kind of clocked on quite early on that just by launching the ball into the box they could cause a bit of mayhem. There was a few balls into our box that, you know, it was panic stations. Samson was all over the place. The defence were struggling to deal with it, and so I think overall to get away from McDermott Park with a point was a really, really good result.
Buster, that was followed up by the Friday night game at Fir Park, the 3-1 defeat to Aberdeen. A game, I suppose, if we're looking at positives, we'll remember for Scott McDonald's fantastic overhead kick, which equalised at 1-1. But after that, very much overpowered by what looked to be a far superior Aberdeen side. Probably as disappointing a 90 minutes as we've witnessed at home. Inverness at Fir Park withstanding, I think that was possibly the poorest display and the most disappointing display, particularly given the positive result we had picked up at McDermott Park only 6 days beforehand.
I think you're right, yeah, but again, I think you have to look at it in terms of, you know, where we are, where they are. I've said it before, you know, they're in the Rainwee group with Rangers and Hearts at the moment. The things you want to forget, you know, maybe bits of the goalkeeping performance, and obviously the way we lost some of the goals as well. But as you say, the only sort of real positive and memorable thing about the game for us was probably Scott McDonald's goal, because it was fantastic, to be fair.
Joe, I'll bring you in for the first time, mate. It does feel like we're going back quite a while when we're looking at these games, but the Aberdeen game, it just felt that we were quite badly overrun. I wasn't is aware personally that there was such a gap between ourselves and Aberdeen, but it was pretty much hit home in quite emphatic fashion in that night in front of the television cameras, which I suppose doesn't make a great deal of difference, but they were significantly better than we were.
There's absolutely no doubt about it. I mean, the way we played in the first half, they were better at passing the ball, they were better at getting themselves into positions. And then in the second half, after obviously we missed a penalty, which could have been a turning point in any match at 2-1, as much as we had a lot of possession in the second half, we at no point looked as if we were going to score, whereas before they did score the third and stoppage time or whenever it was, they actually had three or four times where we were sighing relief that the ball didn't go in. But the only thing I would say about the game was that as much as there was a big gap and a gulf in class perhaps between the two teams, which can come to be accepted when you see what Aberdeen are paying and what kind of players are attracting in comparison to us, it's definitely not out of the ordinary, but they didn't have to work hard for either of their first two goals. And if you add to that obviously we've missed a penalty, the conditions were poor obviously, and that maybe lended to how Moult hit the penalty, but and maybe even how Samson passed the ball out to Hennigan for their first goal, which put us under a amount of pressure we didn't need to be under. But certainly big gulf between the teams, but just frustrating that it wasn't moments of class that won the game for Aberdeen. It was moments of madness from us that lost us the game. With probably McDonald's goal, you could say it's probably the only moment of true class that took place in the game.
Yeah, just a wee bit more than that goal. It was one of the classics for Park. It'll go down and be remembered for a long time. Although I must confess, when I was actually scribbling some notes before we started today, that I had kind of brushed past it, but getting to watch it again is an absolute privilege, a fantastic finish.
It's just unfortunate that the best two goals we've scored this season could come in 3-1 defeats at home.
Yeah, it's not ideal, but we'll still we can still watch them back and forget the score. So after that, it was a trip to Inverness and a Wednesday night for yet another fantastically scheduled fixture. Jay, though, it was a very worthwhile trip. An absolutely dross first half. Really, really poor stuff. A wind-assisted Craig Clay goal got us ahead in the second half. Scott McDonald looked to have put the game beyond reach with a couple of minutes to go, but Inverness did reply and made for what was a slightly tense last 90 seconds of the game. An absolutely vital 3 points. We looked at the final two games of the year. A trip to Inverness, a trip to Hamilton. We had to get points on the board and kind of almost push away from what looked like an almost inevitable battle at the bottom. It's so tight down there, but a few poor results can really leave you looking precarious. It's so up and down. But that being said, you lose at Inverness, you lose at Hamilton. The picture could have been looking very bleak going into that winter break.
Absolutely. You mentioned the conditions, and I think that was the big story of the game up at Inverness. It was horrendous. You know, the wind was just so bad. Perfect example of that being Clay's goal. I think, you know, when he hit it, there was not one Motherwell fan behind that goal that thought it was going anywhere near the back of the net, and it just seemed to, you know, take a gust of wind at the very last moment and drop in. The second goal, Moult, you know, it's a good ball by Moult, but it's heavily wind assisted. You know, get lucky there, the way the ball drops right in front of McDonald. And even, you know, although it's perhaps a bit of poor defending and fingers could be pointed for Inverness's goal, I think again, you know, it's a ball into the box, and I think it's the wind that is just causing that havoc. So it was one of those games where, you know, you weren't going to win the game. You know, Joe mentions the Aberdeen game, you know, about moments of class. The conditions up in Inverness were not going to result in, you know, any class whatsoever. The team that won the game was going to be the team that managed to adapt better to the conditions and basically get stuck in. And I think that although the game itself wasn't a particularly good game, I think we were worth our victory. And I think perhaps one of the big differences was McHugh returning into the middle of the park. Really impressed with him in the middle. He's prepared to tackle anything, and I think that on a game like that Wednesday night in Inverness, with those conditions, it is about getting stuck in. It's about just trying to, you know, do something with the ball, try and win the ball, try and, you know, see what happens, see if you can try and manage the conditions. And I think for me, McHugh was probably the big difference between the sides. And he also has, you know, a bit of class about him, as we saw at Aki's as well. So in terms of getting up to Inverness, again, similar vein to McDermott Park, it's a difficult place to go. We have, you know, some good memories from up there of victories, but when we were discussing the games before they occurred, I think that the general consensus was going to be that December as a whole, including Inverness, was going to be, you know, incredibly difficult. So to go up there and get a win and, you know, add that to points at Aki's and St Johnstone, I think you've got to look at December as being, you know, quite a successful month overall.
We'll bring it almost up to date by discussing them a bit more length, the most recent game and the 1-1 draw against Hamilton at New Douglas Park. Bustard, for the best part, I think we were the better team. The dismissal of Lee Lucas early on in the first half, it made life difficult, and the surface is always a big factor at Hamilton as well. You fall behind. It just didn't look like it was going to be our day. Some chances passed up. But yet, we were still on top possession-wise. We were still creating chances. And just as all hope seemed to be lost, Louis Moult pops up with a fantastic header, sparking some of the best celebrations that we've had in quite some time. A well-earned point and a vital point in the context of where we sit in the league table.
Definitely. You know, I think we started very brightly. I thought we were coasting it, to be honest with you, without actually really scoring or having any major chances. I think, you know, we were doing really, really well. And then I don't really know what Lee Lucas was thinking, to be honest with you. The ref was literally 3 yards away. He's dived in with 2 feet. You know, there's a perfectly good photo of him. 2 feet on the ball, fair enough, but you can't dive in like that. That's something that you take to the wee guy in the park that you don't like when you're 14. I honestly don't know what he was thinking, but from there, I think at the game, I think everybody, ourselves included, that run about us was a bit harsh on the team. You know, we were sitting very deep. You know, as you say, we had a lot of possession, but we weren't going any further than maybe 50 yards out. There was no real out ball. Louis Moult seemed to be, you know, left up front himself, and even he couldn't get out his own half. Then for the goal, they had a goal that was very, very similar, chopped off 2 seconds before it. But the build up was very similar. We seemed to learn nothing for that, and they scored a minute and a half later for the same sort of position. And then for there, obviously we had to throw Scott McDonald back up front after he dropped in the midfield. Things, as you say, were a bit more in our favour at that point. But again, I didn't really think that we were making any chances. I think everybody around about was being a bit harsh on the team, and McGee as well. Everybody sort of, you know, wanted a sub, and even myself, you know, we're screaming out for a sub. But when you look back, obviously, he's called it a bit right. Does he have any sort of faith in somebody like Ainsworth? If he'd come on earlier, would he have been willing to work up and down that side, you know, to get back? I think that's the problem, that, you know, it doesn't get back, and McGee's not a fan of that, to be fair. But as you say, last minute, literally second last kick of the ball, Louis Moult with a great header right in the corner. Scenes. Craig Sampson ran 110 yards to, you know, jump and tap everybody. It felt like a victory, to be fair. And although, you know, people talk down the rivalry with Aki's, you know, they get on your goat a wee bit when there's 10, 30 of them standing at that side shouting things, especially when they've been winning for 60 minutes or whatever it was, or, you know, 45 minutes, whatever it was. And then you know, to get a last minute equaliser, it definitely felt a win.
Yeah, and I suppose, Joe, the kind of overriding factor of the matter is as well, it could have been a point gap between ourselves and Aki's, who are on a run of form that it's really surprising there's not been more question marks placed over Martin Canning's future at the club. But we don't really give a shit about them, to be perfectly honest. The 4-point gap going into the break is very significant, and you kind of struggle to see how Aki's, and certainly in this current vein of form, are going to be able to kind of address that deficit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing with Hamilton Accies is I think they've only won something like, is it 2 league games all season? They've drawn. They're into double figures for draws.
I think you're right. Aye. It's 11 draws, and the last I checked it was 2 wins, but that was a couple of weeks ago, so I think that was an 11th draw. Aye.
They've not added to that over the festive period. That's...
Yeah, certainly that's what I was thinking. So, I mean, it's like you can't really, I mean, picking up draws is all well and good, but when you think about it, you can't really be sitting going into a winter break in January having only won 2 matches all season and not question your manager's future. There's obviously been some credible draws in there for them, for example the drawing with Rangers on the opening day of the season, but the failure to turn them into 3 points is really going to probably cost them at the end of the season, because when you're down, it's all good and well picking up the points just now, but it's going to be, there's going to be a time when it might not be as saturated at the bottom of the league, and teams will need wins to get them out, and draws won't suffice, and if they can't kill off teams, if they don't have the players to win matches, then I can't see them staying in the division. What I thought was strange on Saturday was that had we gone 1-0 up against a 10-man Hamilton Accies, I would have wanted us to go for a second goal. If one goal wouldn't have been enough, other than the one that McManus cleared off the line, to me Accies looked happy to be sitting on 1-0, and then obviously it's come back to cost them in our favour. But yeah, having looked at the table after that game, I wasn't aware before the game how well it would affect us compared to them if we drew. But it's probably the first time I've looked at the table in a few weeks and thought that I was relatively pleased that we're kind of 4 points away from the playoffs with a game in hand, albeit a game in hand against Aberdeen, who were just saying were a golfing class between us. But yeah, it's just looking really poor for Hamilton, I have to say. Yep.
The other thing, Jay, is the significance of the point. You look around us and Partick Thistle will be very pleased with their work over the Christmas period. The same with Dundee, who finished with a brilliant result against St Johnston and Hogmanay. So there was a real onus in us to go out and start picking up some points, and the 3 points earned at Inverness and the point in the derby at New Douglas Park could be very significant come the end of the season.
Yeah, completely right. I think we've said a good few times over the season on the podcast just how, you know, the kind of argument that, well, it's quite tight, there's a lot of teams down there, we'll be fine. It's an argument you can maybe use in September, October, when teams are still, you know, to get going, and when the gaps are really starting to appear, or before the gaps are really starting to appear in terms of, you know, the different groups of teams in the league, you know, who'll be in the relegation zone, who'll be mid-table, etc. But we're now, you know, we're now into 2017. We're now at the stage where, you know, who is going to be battling for relegation is going to become more clear over the next few weeks. The same with, you know, who's battling for Europe. Obviously, we know who's going to win the title. And all it takes is, you know, a team like Dundee or a team like Partick Thistle to put some good, you know, get a bit of momentum, put some good results together, and suddenly we are in a bad place if we don't, you know, do the same. And of course, you know, on the flip side, all it takes is us to put a good few results together, and we can start to push a bit of distance between ourselves and the likes of Aki's if, you know, they don't know follow what we're doing. So that's the, you know, the sort of the balance that you need to get. That's the nature of such a tight league. Things can change so quickly. And I suppose it's Sod's Law, the fact that we go into December, we're looking at it. I think if you go back to maybe one of the podcasts we recorded at the start of December, we're probably quite pessimistic about the month as a whole. You know, as much as Inverness and Aki's are down around us, I think two away games, we weren't particularly optimistic about those. Aberdeen and St Johnson, I think we would probably have written off before going into them. So to get five points over the course of the month, I think is fantastic. It's maybe Sod's Law, the fact that obviously while we're doing that, the likes of Thistle and the likes of Dundee, you know, managed to have a good month as well. But unfortunately, that's the nature of the league. I'm a little bit, you know, adverse to looking at the league table fairly often. I couldn't actually tell you where we are at the moment. I don't really tend to look at it until around, you know, March, April time. So I'm not entirely sure exactly how tight it is. And I think that's not a bad place to be in. There's no point in, you know, being too focused on what the likes of Thistle and Dundee are doing. If we continue what we're doing, then I think we'll be all right. And, you know, it's been a while since I think we've been able to say that. You know, all through September, October, November, we did get the odd good result, but it felt almost as though you got a good result one Saturday and then the next Saturday you were watching an absolutely terrible performance. And although perhaps the performances haven't been excellent over December, in part to the, you know, due to the weather conditions, I think that you have to look at it, be positive. Even in that Aberdeen game, which we've already said there was a golfing class, as Joe said, if Louis Malt puts that penalty away, then, you know, suddenly it's a completely different game. He also said that it wasn't Aberdeen's class, it was our own mistakes. So even a defeat against, you know, a team challenging for second in the league, a team that is far ahead of us, it's a game that, you know, on another day we might not necessarily have lost. So based on the season as a whole up until now, I think December's got to be seen as a really positive month. And if we can continue that and we can, you know, go into the rest of the season playing the same and hopefully getting the same type of results, then we'll definitely be fine. It's just unfortunate that this daft winter break that doesn't really serve any purpose has came when it has.
Just on the league table, we sit in ninth place, a point behind both Dundee and Partick Thistle, 2 points behind Ross County, who find themselves in the top six just now. So I think if you're looking up the way, it looks fairly positive. If you're looking down, we've got a point gap in Kilmarnock, 4 points in Aki's and 5 points in Inverness. So we certainly finished the month in a better situation than we started it. I suppose the game that we did fail to talk about was the visit to Pittodrie, which lasted all of 7 minutes. Great effort by the Aberdeen Electricity Board, managing to not only blow the floodlights but also blow the backup generator as well. So we didn't manage to conclude that game, and then that was caused for yet another rearranged game in a midweek at Aberdeen, which seems to be a bit of a reoccurring theme this season, given that we've already visited Inverness, we'll visit Ross County in February, and also have got this second visit to Aberdeen in the midweek. So there certainly needs to be something looked at there. We discussed it in a previous podcast that it seems nonsensical that while we've got this 2-week gap, that you don't try and fit in some sort of rearranged games or try and work it to the fans' favour. But obviously fans come last, and that's very evident in some of the fixture scheduling. But I'll not start ranting on about that, because it's possibly for another day.
Really, as you says, you know, we could play Aberdeen on a Saturday, you know, maybe take up a few more fans than we would in a Wednesday night. But unfortunately, Aberdeen have decided to go to Dubai. So, as you say, I don't know what this thing, this break is actually for. It's maybe been the mildest winter about, and we've decided to take a break in the middle of it. And watch, come February, we'll have a harsh February, the fixtures will pile up again, I bet you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what, when I said, you know, this pointless 2-week break or 3-week break, I mean, that's my kind of feelings on it as well. We live in a country where, you know, you don't have you know, a predictable 2 weeks of ice cold weather at the start of January, and then everything's rosy again. But Scotland, it could be perfectly nice for the next 2 or 3 weeks, and then you have a couple of games called off because it's blizzards and hailstones for the whole of February. It just seems, if you're not going to move to summer football in a country like Scotland, then there's absolutely no point in a winter break. It just kind of disrupts things, and unless you're going to use it, like Buster suggests, to play some rearranged games, then it just seems totally pointless to me. And just, I know we're not going to rant about it, but the decision by Ross County and Motherwell to move the Wednesday the 1st February game to the Tuesday is an absolutely farcical decision. Fans go last as usual, and they seem to be unaware that a lot of fans, if you want to take time off work midweek to go up to Dingwall, some people need to put their annual leave in along, you know, book it ages in advance. You know, there are trains, there are hotels, and you can maybe tell that I've already booked my accommodation and trains up for the Wednesday, but I just think that's an absolutely ridiculous decision, and there doesn't seem to be any explanation for it whatsoever.
No, that's it. Just on the Aberdeen and Dubai, I suppose we can't really, and I don't think you were, to be fair, Buster, taking a pot shot at them for booking a break. They're more than entitled to do so if they've got a couple of weeks break in the schedule. I'm pretty sure that the Motherwell Football Club would be looking at going to a place like Dubai if we could afford it, but you've just got to hope that we can use this in a positive way. I know the players are back in at the start of next week, so we'll have 2 weeks training before we take to the field at Ibrox for the Scottish Cup game, but I just feel it could be better served, and in a selfish point of view as well, it just breaks up our momentum that after finishing the year on a high note. A guy that very much finished his year on a high after a disappointing start, I suppose, to his career at Motherwell, through very little fault of his own, an overzealous challenge or a committed challenge at Rugby Park in the opening day cost Carol McHugh the first 4 months of his career at Motherwell. He's returned in fantastic fashion, hasn't he, Buster? The game at Inverness and then another excellent performance at Aki's. This is considering that he's not kicked a ball in the best part of 4.5 months. He's come back, played both games for the duration, and not only that, he's possibly been the best player in the park in both of these games as well.
Yeah, I didn't make it up to Inverness, unfortunately, but against Aki's, he was one of the players who I thought at the time there and then was getting pass marks. Not to be harsh on everybody else, but I just thought everybody else, Scott McDonald aside, actually Scott McDonald was probably the best player in the park, but everybody else was sort of just doing their job. But Carol McHugh, I thought, was looking really well, and as you say, 4 months of doing nothing. I think he literally had to do nothing for at least 3 of that before he was allowed to then start running again and things like that. So it's good to see him coming back. It's, you know, he showed a wee bit of promise in the, you know, the League Cup section, things like that. So it was good to see him come back, continue where he left off, basically. I think it was November he came up to the hospitality and spoke to us, and, you know, he seemed pretty eager to get back in the park. And as you said, you know, he's come back with a bang, basically. He's looking good. He's looking as if he's maybe the thing that we've been missing in there, you know, holding it together. So once we get our players fit, see who's, you know, come through in January, see how we set up, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how he fits in and how well he actually does.
Yeah, absolutely. That'll take us on nicely to have a look at the transfer window. And last year it was a month that we did a wee bit of activity. The previous season was very busy. The likes of Marvin Johnson arriving, along with a few others. Remember Nathan Thomas coming in, but it was a busy deadline day. It was kind of like a deadline day like never before. The one under Ian Barraclough 2 seasons back. Jay, you wouldn't imagine that it would be as busy this time around, but we've already seen a wee bit of activity. Dom Thomas has moved to Queen of the South on loan. There's been a bit of speculation regarding the return for Stephen Pearson. There's been some newspaper and online broadcast rumours of some bids for Louis Moult. So I think while we're going to maybe try and do a wee bit of business, try and get one or two in. I think this maybe the more significant part will be trying to keep a hold of our assets and ensuring that we've got a strong squad there left to just ensure that we don't get drawn into a relegation battle or a battle for the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, whether it's trying to hold on to our assets or if they are to go, at least making sure that they go for, you know, an adequate price. Yeah, I tend to agree. There is one or two areas in the team that I do think we need to strengthen a little bit. I think basically down the left-hand side of our team, I think a left-back and a left-sided midfielder would be priority for me. I think we've seen, particularly over December, and particularly at McDermott Park, as I said earlier, when McDonald was played on the left because we just didn't have MD to play there, it just didn't work in the slightest. Even at Aki's, I thought we were far too narrow. We essentially went with a diamond, which, you know, can work, but on that kind of game, I thought, particularly when we went down to 10 men, you know, the opposition tends to try and make the park very wide when you're down to 10 men, and when you're playing with four central midfielders or three by that point, it can become really, really difficult. So I think the last couple of weeks have said to me that we're crying out for a left-sided midfielder. And at full-back, I've been impressed by McMillan, but you know, he is right-sided, and I think we would be better served with a left-sided defender that could either play in the first team or at least provide cover for Hamill, who seems to be, you know, struggling a lot more these days. In terms of players going out, you know, yes, there's rumours about Malt, although I saw Allardyce confirmed yesterday that there's absolutely no truth in Palace going after him, but there are, you know, talk about Cardiff, Burton, Derby, etc. And, you know, let's be honest, scouts and, you know, scouting teams at those kind of teams, those kind of clubs wouldn't be doing their jobs properly if they weren't at least, you know, making reports on somebody like Louis Malt. There's also, I know there was talk about, you know, potential of McDonald going back to Australia. So a lot, I think, depends on who leaves. In saying that, the comments from McGee about both Lucas and Pearson in particular seem to suggest that there is, you know, scope to get one or two players in. If you're talking about bringing Pearson in, then you would assume that that's a reasonable wage. So it seems as though there is some space in the budget to maybe see what, you know, maybe bring one or two in. But we'll just have to wait and see what happens. You know, McGee, we've spoke before, McGee perhaps has had a bit of a hit and miss transfer record so far at Motherwell, as do all managers, but I think, you know, when you're bringing in guys like Blythe, like Bellich, you know, and who don't seem to be good enough to even, you know, exist in the first place, it will be interesting to see just, you know, what kind of activity there is in January. But if we can hold on, yeah, I'd be delighted if we can hold on to Malt, McDonald, etc., and we were able to bring in, you know, cover for left-back and a left-sided midfielder, I think I would be perfectly happy going into the rest of the season.
We are talking about, in a football sense, before anyone contacts us saying that it's a disgrace that we said that Jacob Blythe doesn't deserve to exist. John, it's an interesting one for me. Lee Lucas, who I've thought has done well when he's been given the opportunity, a disappointing afternoon for him on Saturday, but that aside, I think his contributions when he's been fit, again, that's a big when there, because he has picked up a lot of injuries very much from his first game, which was back at Annan in the Betfred Cup. You then talk about Pearson coming in. Alan Campbell's just broken through and be given his first team debut, or his first team start. We could become a bit overloaded when it comes to players in the centre of the park.
Absolutely. I mean, we were discussing this a few years the other day. I wouldn't keep Lee Lucas personally, and it sounds like it's very harsh. I do have genuine sympathy for the guy that he's, if what I'm proposing is us not keeping him, is a comes to fruition, his last contribution in a Motherwell top was that overzealous challenge at Hamilton Accies, which I wouldn't say too much about, but I covered my thoughts on it earlier in the podcast. But for me, the guys have a genuine sympathy for how his career's gone. He's obviously been a decent prospect at Swansea. I think it's 19 under 21 caps he's got for Wales. So there obviously is potential there. And we've seen that when he plays. That, I mean, against Ross County, he was man of the match, and deservedly so. And a couple other times I've seen him, I've been impressed as well. But for me, if it was a straight swap between... You could get Pearson in, but you need to let Lucas go. I mean, it would be Pearson every day for me. And I know Pearson will command a bigger wage than Lucas is on just now, I would imagine. But if it became a straight swap between them, I would definitely pick Pearson. And furthermore, like if you're saying we could become overloaded in central midfield, I mean, you're talking about having McHugh, Clay, Lasley, Alan Campbell, David Turnbull, Cadden can come in and play there, so you've got a lot of options there. So is there the necessity to keep Lucas? I would be inclined to say maybe not. If we could use the wage we're giving him on a left midfielder or a left back, two positions I agree with Jay that are a priority in recruiting, and then I would definitely edge towards that. If we don't, and if we couldn't, and if Lucas is maybe going to be the only person who could take that chunk of our budget and have a decent contribution, then I would maybe keep him. But while I've got sympathy for his injuries, I don't think we can be too charitable in terms of the guy had 3 months between his first and his second start for Motherwell, and then he had 6 weeks between his second and his third start. And if you are using a bit of a limited budget on a player who might not be needed, you're talking about having a surplus of central midfielders, he might be a nice to have but not needed in there. You would need to think that for that player to become valuable for whatever chunk of the budget he's taken up, you would need to be able to rely on him being available all the time. And while all players can get injured, just look at McHugh's freak injury against Kilmarnock. With Lucas's track record, you just don't know how much of that season he's going to be fit for. And you don't know if at the end of the season we've still had problems at left back, we've still not had much creativity down the left hand side there in midfield, will we be ruining the fact that we kept him and he's had 3 or 4 niggly injuries that's seen him a long period in the sidelines? I mean, it's a really tough one. You obviously don't want to see a lad with potential lose his job or whatever over being injured and maybe giving a red card at the end of it. It's a really tough one, but I mean, it was a knock in training between the Ross County game and them returning against, was it Aberdeen he returned against? Maybe not, it was St Johnstone the week before. It was a knock in training, and I mean, if a knock in training is leaving them out for that 6-7 weeks, however long it was, I mean, it's a really tough one to see. Does he add that value to your squad when he's only been available for a percentage of the season?
I think the main point there, I think that Joe hits the nail on the head in terms of it being a tough one, because it's a unique situation. Often in these situations, if you had a player comes in for 6 months, we would all probably normally, normal circumstances, would be talking about him having all seen, you know, either enough of him to make a judgment, or knowing that we haven't seen enough of him because he hasn't been good enough to make it into the team. You know, like guys like Blythe, like guys like Bellich. It's such a unique situation because, as Joe said, his injuries have ruled him out for so long. What I think's, you know, worth taking into consideration, though, is the fact that Mark McGee, whatever you want to say about Mark McGee, he obviously knows his own mind. He knows who he rates as a footballer and who he doesn't. I've already mentioned, you know, likes of Blythe, even look at guys like Lang, like Kennedy. It's very clear that when Mark McGee has come into Motherwell, if he doesn't rate someone, then you will never see them again, essentially. The fact that we have a player who is as injury prone as Lee Lucas, and yet he's in and around the team, he's starting games when he's fit, he is now, you know, there's now talk from McGee in the press that he wants to keep him. That to me says that there is a significant amount of talent there, a significant amount of ability there that McGee's seen. Maybe not, you know, on a Saturday because he's injured most of the time, but perhaps in training. you know, that to me says that it might be worth pursuing if it's something that suits us financially. It's all very well, you know, rhyming off our midfielders, but David Turnbull isn't in the first team. Alan Campbell's only played one game, and as much as I appreciate that they're young players, and I would prefer to give young players a start, the plan might be for both to go on loan in the coming months. So, you know, you can't just sort of throw about these names as an argument for not keeping someone. In terms of the actual players that are left, Lasley, Clay and McHugh, for me, when you're lining up, are probably all going to be playing a relatively similar position. I think they are perhaps slightly more defensive than attacking, than creative. It seems to me that Lee Lucas is favoured as a more, you know, attacking player. We haven't perhaps seen enough of that, apart from at the game at Ross County, but that's my feeling on it. So even if you brought Pearson in as well, you're only really looking at two attack-minded central midfielders. Yes, you could play Cadden there, but, you know, is he wasted in the middle when I think he's far better on the right? So for me, as much as I agree that I would take Pearson over Lucas, I think that you'd be mad not to. I still believe that there's possible scope for both. And if Pearson doesn't fancy coming back, then I think I would be all right keeping Lucas, because it's quite clear to me that, again, you know, maybe not McGee's biggest fan, but it's obvious that for someone with so many injuries and so little game time, Mark McGee obviously really, really rates him as a player. And who knows, you know, we've also, you know, we've got the conditioning coach Bolsey there, we've got, you know, a structure at the club to hopefully treat these injuries. A lot was made of it by Les Hutchinson in the past about how, you know, what we'd put in place at the club meant that we were actually saving money because players weren't getting injured, etc. So if that is the case, then maybe Lucas is making progress. Maybe we may see a fully fit Lucas in the future. I think it's a bit early in the boy's career. If it's suiting us financially, again, you know, whether it's pay as you play, maybe it's, you know, just a small deal. As long as there's not a great deal of risk, I wouldn't be against keeping them at all.
See, I agree with a lot of what you've said there, but for me, it's if you've got a guy who's spent as much time in the treatment table as he has done over his course of his career at Motherwell, he's came here and he's played three professional games before he came to Motherwell, albeit he's had 19 caps with Wales under 21s. He's played probably against a high calibre player playing in Swansea's development squads and their under 19s and whatever. I take that on board definitely, but to risk a guy who you know is going to spend, well, you don't know obviously, but there's a high chance that he'll spend a fair bit of his time at the club on the treatment table. You want a guy, if you're taking that risk, as you say, it might be a small part of your budget or whatever, but if you're taking a risk on a guy with an injury track record, normally for me that would be a guy who's been over the course and you know he can do it. It wouldn't be a guy you think he might be good if he stays fit. And with the greatest respect to Lucas, and as I have said, I've got a genuine sympathy for the guy. He's not 18 or 19. Lucas is 24. So if he's got to 24 and he can't, obviously you're saying we might see him continue to be fit. But for me, there isn't really great evidence of that he's able to do that. And you're not talking over the course of one or two injuries. You're talking like a guy who's 24 and probably a few years, if that, from coming into the peak of his career, and with the greatest respect to him, he's not proven himself at any club level yet. That would be what would lend more to my way thinking that if keeping him meant that we weren't redressing the balance issues in the squad, then I would let him go. I think he is a talented footballer, there's absolutely no doubt about that, but a talented footballer of no use to you when he's standing with Peter Elder in the hospitality on a Saturday afternoon rather than on the pitch.
I agree with you, but I mean, I think the point I'm trying to make is I'm certainly not Lee Lucas's agent. I'm not advocating for him to be given a deal. I go back to my original point, though. We are discussing the unknown. We are jumping to conclusions. Now, obviously the bookies' odds would be that yes, he's missed a lot of the season, particularly because he's injury prone. But it's not worth jumping to assumptions. I mean, at the end of the day, One of the examples you used there, Joe, was the idea that he took a knock in training and was out for 6 weeks. I wasn't there. As far as I'm aware, you weren't there. You can frame that two ways. You can suggest that it was, a shoulder challenge from someone that led to an injury prone's, chocolate knees disintegrating, or somebody could have done them. I mean, we are talking about the complete unknown. And I think that as much as it's obviously relevant that he's injury prone, and of course the risk, in both in terms of his injuries and how much finances we would be using to keep him at the club, that has to be taken into consideration. I don't really see any point in isolating certain injuries. For all we know, somebody went in studs high on him in training. The idea that
it was legal.
The idea that he just disintegrated because he's injury prone, I think, it's all hearsay, it's all rumour. It is based on some logic, it's based on a knowledge of his injury problems, but the simple fact is we just don't know. We don't know what McGee sees in him, we don't know what the plans are for our young midfielders, we don't know the real likelihood of Pearson coming back, and we don't know how Lucas is progressing in terms of managing these injuries. It may be that McGee and Andy Bowles and the management staff actually believe that, after this winter break, Lee Lucas might actually be in a position to see out the rest of the season. And so I don't want, as much as it's it's a relevant factor, I think to just dismiss a player based on it when we don't actually know exactly where he'll fit in, how much we're spending, and really what McGee sees in him, then, I'm happy in this regard to kind of just go with the flow. And if we sign him, fantastic. And as I said, I think there's still, a very good possibility that we could end up with both Lucas and Pearson.
The big factor is that we discuss Lucas's pedigree. The reason that he's ended up here and he's not kicked on and played at a higher level is possibly because of those injuries. So we've given him the chance. Yes, he has been quite injury prone right up until December of last year, but since then he's actually had a run in the team. He's performed well. He's possibly viewed as very much minimal risk in terms of budget. He's still got to prove that fitness. And then it's an opportunity for him to kick on. I wouldn't say that he'll be considering chucking the game because of these injuries, given that he's getting continued runs. When he's getting a chance, he's playing reasonably well. So I think the talent's there, and I can't really imagine that there's too much scepticism over Lucas's ability now. He's had 6 or 7 months, but maybe not quite as long as that, but he's had a fair amount of time to prove himself. I think he has proven himself. Mark McGee seems certainly keen, so I don't even know. I don't think there's any worry. If Lucas signs, then I think it can only be a positive.
I would let him go. I don't mean to be harsh on him, but I would let him go because, as we've mentioned, I mean, how many times has he actually played in the last 6 months?
Well, he's played more times than Carroll McHugh, I'm sure, and yet we're raving about him.
Yeah, I understand that, but I think it's a different situation. But just on Lucas, I would let him go. He's spent more time injured than he has playing, and on what possibly could have been his last game, to try and prove himself. He did something stupid like diving with his 2 feet, six inches in front of the referee. As you say, he's obviously got a bit of talent there, but I don't know. It's not happening for me, unfortunately. And it's not obviously it's no up to me anyway. But if it was up to me, I would let him go. But if he comes in, performs well, stays with us and performs well, I'll be more than happy to see that happen as well. But just based on what's happened so far, I would have to let him go.
Never have I made a point in this podcast that's been blown out the water as quickly as that last one was there. That was quite
magnificent.
That was less than a second, I think, between me saying that we should definitely keep him to you saying, no, I'll be getting rid of him.
No, it's just, again, it's just my uneducated opinion on the facts, on the matter, sorry. But as I say, it's just basing it on the amount of games he's played. And I take Jay's point about Carroll McHugh very, I take that on board. But just,
to be fair, the point in Carroll McHugh was a bit tongue-in-cheek. Of course, it's different situations. Yeah. But I just think that,
you know, at the end of the day, a player like Lee Lucas is either going to retire, is going to have a career that is just plagued with injuries, or on occasion, you know, a player like that comes good. I think we would all kind of accept that Phil O'Donnell was heavily known as an injury-prone player throughout his career. He was essentially, you know, a sick note. He went to Sheffield Wednesday, was out for long spells, etc. And yet, I don't think any of us would, you know, speak of disparagingly of Phil O'Donnell's ability and what he offered, particularly to Motherwell. So I think to just dismiss a player, you know, completely outright based on injuries, I think, you know, it has to be taken into consideration. I just wouldn't completely dismiss a player purely based on it.
Well, coming in there, Jay, on your point, kind of reinforces what I said earlier on regarding Lee Lucas. If you take a punt on a player that you know is injury prone, as we did with Phil O'Donnell had proven himself over a number of years to be a fantastic footballer. So that's kind of, it's more of an educated punt taking someone like Phil O'Donnell rather than someone that's played.
I was just going to say, to get to the point where you're taking an educated punt late on in someone's career, there needs to have been clubs to take uneducated punts earlier in the player's career.
To an extent, with Phil O'Donnell,
in general, with any player, you know, if you're talking about a player who, you know, is going to go through his career with injuries, for us to be in a position with a player, you know, in his early to mid-30s, to make a decision, an educated punt on him, then it would require, you know, maybe we are the uneducated punt early in Lee Lucas's career. I mean, I guess that's my point. My point isn't that we should definitely keep him or definitely let him go. My point is that, you know, there's so many unknowns in this subject because we just don't know what McGee's thinking.
Absolutely. I mean, you're basing your opinion based on what you know about the situation, and so am I. Like, who's to say who's right between us? It's just basically what we're basing it on. But I guess what I was trying to say there was that you're saying we might be that educated punt. We might be the uneducated punt for Lee Lucas. I guess I'm saying it's. Do we want to? When we're not clear from relegation, when we don't know how our season's going to turn out, do we want to imbalance our squad with several central midfielders, in doing so being the uneducated punt? That's probably where I stand on it.
Just the last one on the transfer window. I'll go to you, Bastard. Stephen Pearson, he seems to be able to have the luxury of kind of picking and choosing when he comes back to Motherwell, and I suppose the contribution he makes when he does come back justifies that. Do you think that it would be kind of dismissive to some of the younger players by bringing Pearson back again? He can kind of almost swan off and make his money elsewhere and then come back when that's finished? Or would you kind of argue that the young players should be seen as a priority and perhaps it's time to let go in terms of Stephen Pearson?
I don't know. To be fair, I think it's a good question, but depending on, you know, we've all seen what Pearson's done in the past. You know, is he still that player? He must be, what, 33, 34 or something now. You know, is he still the same player he was? Has he adapted his game in the last, what, 6 months or so? You know, what type of player is he, to be fair? The one thing I don't want to see is us signing Pearson and playing him in left midfield. I don't think that, again, I might be wrong, but I don't think that would be his game anymore. I would like to see him come back, as long as, you know, the financially for us it's right. You know, as long as he's willing to put on a shift, and not that he wouldn't be, of course, but I mean, you know, just as long as he's going to benefit us, basically, I'd love to see him come back. But there isn't really MD other than, maybe, as you see, we know the young boy the other day started there as well in midfield, but other than Chrissy Cadden, you know, these guys aren't really anywhere near Turnbull and things like that, aren't really anywhere near the first team. But would it, as you asked, would it be unfair just to bring somebody in and, you know, skip the queue, essentially? I don't think it would be unfair. That's how it works. You know, the young boys need to they need to be given a chance, obviously, but they need to prove that they're worthy of that chance. And if we can bring in better quality, especially when we're not, 100% in, 100% safe, basically, we need to put out the best team we possibly can. And if bringing in Stephen Pearson, regardless of whether or not Lee Lucas is here as well, if bringing him in, best for our short-term future, at least, I think it's something we should definitely look at.
See what you were saying there about left midfield, Buster. I've kind of thought about that the last few days about whether I think he could do the job there, because I mean, it would sort of, if he came in there, it would maybe give us the sort two problems out at once, if kind of we were bringing him back in anyway and we need someone to play in the left hand side. As much as his last spell, all but two or three games he was playing in the centre, unless he's lost the engine he had when he left us in the 6 months when he's been in India, I don't see why he couldn't do a job in the left-hand side. But if you are talking about what his best position is, and it's centre midfield, and if you're bringing him in on what I suppose would be one of your highest wages, then to get the best out of him, you would maybe say play him in the position he's most familiar with. But I actually think that he probably could help us out in the left-hand side there.
I tend to agree with you there, Joe. Also, it's worth taking into consideration the sort of the narrow diamond we did play Aki's. As I said, I wasn't particularly a fan of it. But, if that's, a kind of system that McGee might employ in the future, then you could certainly see Pearson on the left-hand side of that diamond, for example. I tend to agree. I think that perhaps he might not have as much pace as he once did, but I don't think there's anything to suggest that he wouldn't be able to play in the left. I think he's better in the centre. I think that you are nullifying the threat that Pearson can give you by moving him in the left, but I certainly don't think he wouldn't be able to be a success there.
I'd love to be not proved wrong, because it's not something I say they can do. It's just maybe something I wouldn't like to see him do, but if it comes to it and he comes in and he does play a sort of left, left side of the role, if you're playing, if it works out for us, great. But as you say, I think his attributes being his best in the middle, I think. And if we can, I'd like to see us bring in somebody else at left midfield as well. But obviously, on short budget, things like that, we could be killing two birds with one stone, essentially.
Just, we're kind of running out of time here. We're going to run very much over time, but the 2016, a year I heard Keith Lasley looking back on it and talked about the first half and how positive it was from what looked like a pretty dodgy and precarious situation around February time. The team managed to pull off what felt like a bit of a great escape, and then suddenly you end up in the top half of the league. So it was a great turnaround in the early part of 2016. Then Mark McGee has a transfer window, and as we've discussed before, it was a mixed bag. Some real positives in the likes of Ben Hennigan and Richard Tate, and then obviously the disappointments that we've mentioned as well. This season so far, I would say I've been pretty disappointed by what I've seen. Not even as much in terms of results, but I think you could count in one hand the amount of really impressive performances we've managed to put in as well, which has been disappointing after the positivity that we had going into the start of the new season. I don't know what your guys' thoughts are. Is 2016 now a case of we must do better than we look back in the second half of 2016, or are you pretty happy with a lot for the last year?
Well, as you says, comparing where we are and where we were, I think, I don't know about points wise, but I think positionally we're slightly better off than we were this time last year. As you says, come about February, I think we were setting bottom, if not bottom at one point. I don't think we're bottom. It was Dundee United, was it? No, last season we're bottom. But whatever, we then went on a run, and that's all it really takes, putting five or six results together, and you'll rock it up our wee group, basically. If we were to win four or five games,
out of the next, I don't know, maybe say 8 games or something, you probably find us pulling away from, you know, the essentially what is the bottom 7, I take it, you know, it's from 6 downwards. And in terms of how this season has went, it's, as you say, it's been a bit of a mixed bag. There's times where we've, you know, at Hamilton at home, for example, where it looked like our season was going to kickstart there. You know, William Holt had just come back from injury, he scored 4 goals. And, you know, we were thinking, here we go. And then the week after, it was a bag of shite again. That's essentially how it was for, a couple of weeks. One week we were performing well, maybe not performing well, but picking up a couple of points, wins here and there. And then the next week, again, utter dross and getting hammered. So I think it's, for the second half of the season here, the first half of 2017, we need to just put together a wee bit of consistent results, and it should see us safe for the remainder of the season. And, you know, hopefully we'll do well in the cups as well, because ever since we moaned about the fact that we were only getting Rangers at home once or whatever it was, the SFA and the SPFL have done everything to give us Rangers all the time, so, you know, they're making up for the money we've lost there.
I think the second half of the season, I would love to see us win 2 games in a row, but I think it's been kind of similar for most teams down where we are. I think that's why it's so congested, is that no one's actually seemed to hit form below us, and that's kind of left us as much of a muchness. So I think it'll become more clear in the second half of the season. I would agree with you. I think I heard the same interview with Lasley as you did, Sparra, and he said could do better, and that's probably where I'd see where we are. There's defeats where I think have been avoidable, things I think we could have done better, but on the whole, I'm not that down about where we are just now, in terms of the fact that on the balance of things, we budgeted for 10th, I'm led to believe, this season, and we're 9th, so you'd say, as tight as it is, our heads are above water in that respect. And as I was jokingly said, that I just really hope we win 2 games in a row, you have to take into consideration that Hamilton have won 2 games all season. So I think we've got a good platform to go for the second half of the season now. I would like to see 1 or 2 additions that would improve certain areas, but I'd say on track, yeah.
No, yeah, I think I would be pretty much the same. I think it would be interesting to see what this conversation would have been like had December not went the way it did. I think December's obviously set us up quite nicely going into 2017. And for me, the biggest problem has just been consistency. You know, Buster gets it spot on. You know, 1 week brilliant. You know, Aki's 4-0, and then the next week bag of shite. That's the best way to put it. And that's our biggest problem this season. I think, you know, you have a decent team. Certainly by the standards of the division we're in and the teams around us, I think we've got a good enough side to, you know, at least not have to worry about relegation. But it's just trying to get some sort of consistency, and that's been our biggest problem. So, you know, obviously it remains to be seen what happens in January in terms of transfers going out and in. But if we can just get a little bit of consistency and maybe put a few results together, then I'll be perfectly happy. I'm certainly not as pessimistic or despondent as I perhaps was around October, November, because I did start to think that relegation could be a real possibility. But I think December has really put us in a good place. As I said, the winter breaks came at a poor time, but I'd be optimistic and positive about going into 2017. I certainly don't expect us to do what we did last season and suddenly find ourselves in 5th. But I think comfortably mid-table should and probably will be what we expect for the rest of the season.
Guys, what we'll do is, well, just kind of on a final note there, I was thinking, I'm actually caught in 2 trains of thought there. It's quite interesting that 2 draws and a win out of 6 games are kind of have left us in a positive mood going into the new year, which possibly is quite indicative of what kind of season it's been so far, but it certainly has had a positive effect in the league table, so I completely get what you're saying. But what we'll do is we'll regroup ahead of the Scottish Cup game in a week or so's time. But thanks very much for your time this morning.
Cheers.
No bother.
Thank you, Joe, and we'll no doubt speak to you again, possibly next week. You've been listening to the LFC podcast. We'll be back possibly around a week on Monday. Don't hold us to any promises. Until then, thank you, goodbye.
Don't know how long I've been watching the light.